look at me as the centerpiece. Like when you look at a table, there is something in the center, right? That beautifies that table. I am your financial centerpiece. I might not be licensed in investments, or I might not be a CPA or a licensed insurance agent. However, I have a team of people that I refer to you, right? I am a big component of clients creating their financial dream team.
Here's the tempo. I'll give it to you now. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to another episode of The Culture's Money.
Welcome to The Culture's Money.
The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos. Jamal Vitos.
Jamal Vitos. All right, welcome back, culture members. This is another episode of The Culture's Money. Culture's Money is a podcast where we discuss all cultural mindsets in regards to the culture, the Black culture's relationship with money, investing, entrepreneurship, and just overall wealth management. I am your host, Jamal Vito. Some of you may know me on other platforms as Leo Grand Prince, but however it is that you know me, I hope you know me to be an advocate of financial literacy, generational wealth, and generational health. I got another good episode for you again. And this one is a long, long time coming. Scheduling things couldn't get us on the last season, but she's been kind enough to grace us with her presence this time, and we appreciate it. I've met her on, you guys know I'm always meeting my guests on social media, which is a great networking platform. I've met this young woman on, I think it was Instagram. She may correct me in a few moments, but it's Instagram. We've been conversing, talking about things, and she's going to lead us in our conversation in reference to the small business entrepreneurship realm. So introduce yourself to the people and tell them about yourself a little bit.
Hello. Hello, everyone. First of all, thank you very much for this opportunity. I know we had a time trying to get a schedule, but you know, I always believe in truly divine timing. Mm-hmm. And I think that the position that I am personally in now just presents for a much better interview today. So I'm really excited. My name is Lindsay Peel. I am a second generation entrepreneur, Howard University alum, former business banker with over 5 years of retail and small business banking experience. I am really, really, really passionate about helping entrepreneurs like yourself, but also entrepreneurs who look like us, connect the dots between their personal and business finances in order to truly leave a legacy worth living. I would consider myself a disruptor of systemic racial disparities in wealth creation, home ownership, and specifically entrepreneurship for our people. So I am so glad to be here. I am looking forward to introducing you guys to this new transformation in my life and more.
That's one of the best intros I've heard. Nothing against my other guests, but that was just really concise and everything. And she is correct. We were chopping it up before I started recording for you guys. I asked her because you guys know I'm always respectful of my guests, you know, corporate compliance. And I was like, what can't we not talk about? And she was like, oh, gloves are all off. So we should be able to get some wealth of information here in terms of the things that she sees, her knowledge base and all that. So let's start. Tell me, how did you end up in business banking? Is it something that you've always wanted to do? Did you find it in college, or, you know, it was just through different employment experiences you wind up getting there?
Yeah, no, great question. So I like to tell people that my industry was made for me. You know, this was ultimately my purpose, and I did not have a long-term vision for this at all. My parents are entrepreneurs, and it's funny because when I talk to my mom now about what I do, she's just so amazed because growing up, I was not that interested in business. You know, she would try to teach me how to run the family business, and I was just this uninterested teenager who wanted to go out there and do my own thing. And initially, my undergraduate degree is in broadcast journalism. So initially, I wanted to be a news anchor, you know, radio host, etc. But while I was a student at Howard, I was actually looking for a part-time internship, and I found a part-time job as a teller at the Wells Fargo that was right down the street from Howard University's campus. Mm-hmm. And I started working there, of course, for the money, but I was also like, okay, cool.
Let's be honest, maybe, of course, for the money. I like it when y'all are.
Listen, I had just finished my junior year and I was like, okay, listen, I'm staying in DC this summer. I don't want to go back home, so I need to make some money. So I found a part-time job. And at the time, I thought that was a fairly decent salary. It was like $13.75 in DC for a part-time teller with no experience. So I was like, I'll take that. And I started, you know, contributing to my 401k and really just started creating my financial portfolio as a student, but also as a part-time employee. And I loved it specifically because my team in the bank were full of minorities. We were all Black, except we had maybe one Hispanic at the time. And we were all under the age of 35. So everybody in the branch under the age of 35 who looks like us in DC, we were hungry for success and we meshed very well. Our branch manager, she was from Florida, so she was a Southern Belle like myself, so I connected with her really well. But most importantly for me is that I enjoyed the connection that I saw the branch team have on the community. We served a very mass market, so we would have business owners. We would also be the branch that was packed on the first and the third, you know, so all of our uncles and aunties and grandparents, you know, rolling up in there, snatching up all of their Social Security. So I saw a lot of things, even as a newbie in the industry. And I fell in love with teaching financial literacy. That's really what stuck with me. And after I graduated from Howard, I remained in the banking industry. I took a promotion that fall, and I've been promoted ever since, every single year, just because of my hustle, but also because I love what I do. If you know me, if you had an opportunity to work with me when I was in the banking system, then you know that I was not your average banker. I just was not. You know, somebody would tell me that I cared too much to be your average banker. So I started as a part-time teller, and I take that as a compliment. I started as a part-time teller. Then I was in a dual role between a teller and a personal banker. Then I became a personal banker, then a business banker. And then I became a branch manager, and business development officer. So I have served in every single role within your retail branch makeup, and it has been an awesome experience. And as of last October, I actually transitioned from corporate to create my own consulting firm. So I am the founder and principal consultant at Kingdom Vision Consulting. We are a financial services firm that specifically educates and empowers entrepreneurs of color to build generational wealth using five key pillars known as CLASS. And that's credit worthiness, long-term wealth, asset protection, strategic banking relationships, and strategic asset accumulation. So I really, really, really want to be a part of that core group of people that focus on community development, economic development for our people.
You said a lot there that was great. Give me, because I always, because I know some people, they're familiar as much as we can, even though the community is still getting the financial literacy portion down. Getting them to understand the regular personal checking and savings and all that is still a challenge. So I'm probably sure some probably don't even know what business banking is. Could you tell them what business banking is in a simplistic form and some of the services that entrepreneurs that might be, you know, listening to this, considering this, already in, you know, the entrepreneurial or running a small operations game, what they, you know, could look for in business services or what's out there that they might not know?
Absolutely. So as an entrepreneur, you know, you think about, and sometimes you don't, but you are either directed to, you know, separate your personal and your business funds, right? Which is an absolute must. And when you go and open up that business checking account, sometimes we think that that's it to it. But when you are an entrepreneur, you can get introduced to so many different aspects of banking, especially when it comes to relationship management. And each bank does that in a very different way. So when it comes to business banking, typically things are split between small business, which is when you make less than $1 or $2 million in gross revenue. You also have your commercial banking, which are those more established companies who are over that range. And then you also have corporate banking. So the majority of my clients do fall within that small business banking segment. And when you are a small business owner, a lot of times you are focusing on those cash flow tools and services. So your checking accounts, savings accounts, your merchant services, which is how you get paid from your clients. You also focus on the beginner, typically that startup business credit, or whether that's a business credit card, which I suggest every entrepreneur should at least have a business credit card. If you're not able to get one, let's definitely talk so we can coach you to get in there. But also you have the availability for business loans, business lines of credit, et cetera. It gets really detailed and specific when you're a business owner, because not only are we looking at your business financials, but as an owner, and specifically if you own at least 25% or more interest in the business, we're also looking at your personal relationship. So for entrepreneurs specifically, I always encourage them to find a bank where they can create a personal relationship as well as a business relationship. Because as a business owner, you are an ideal client for a bank, because you are the type of person that can have a wheelhouse of products and services, specifically because you have a business entity and your personal finance.
So in reference to, let's get to the nitty gritty. I'm going to pull a Band-Aid off this. Like, I'm sure you've seen the mechanism in which is that banks might view Black and minority business loans a little bit quite different. Well, not a little bit, a lot different than they would a Caucasian or a white business, you know, loan application. What mechanisms that you see, or what programs are available for, you know, people in our culture to combat those issues so that their application, when it comes across the desk, can be in the best position as possible? Because I know there are a lot of, you know, programs and grants and things that, you know, people in our culture don't even know about, because we don't have, you know, for so long we didn't have access to the information. So it wasn't really, you know, on the back of our head for someone to tell us this. So what things did you see when you were there for in the industry for 5 years that could really help someone trying to place their business in the best position as possible?
So Jamal, I'm one of those people where I believe that there are always two sides to a story, mm-hmm. you know? So as people of color, we do always look at the bank as the problem in our relationships. And listen, I'm not going to discredit that at all, because the banking industry has definitely discriminated amongst our community for years. That is just the standard. Even when you walk into a bank, most people aren't even accustomed to seeing a lot of Black people who work for these institutions. Like, just let's just be real, right?
Exactly.
So, but another component to looking at these relationships is because specifically in my business, we discuss strategic banking relationships, and I encourage my entrepreneurs to have them, because your bank can ultimately be one of your first financial investors, your financial partner. Because when we hear the term OPM, using other people's money to grow and establish your business, it's the same thing when you're establishing credit. Credit is still somebody else's money that you're using to achieve your goals. The biggest issue is that when we see a lot of entrepreneurs of color and having issues with their banking relationships, is because both parties have not been able to really show up and support their weight of the relationship. The bank probably has not really shared, you know, as much resources as they could for that client, because I see it sometimes you walk into the bank and they don't offer you anything. And it's not always offering a product or a service. It's also just about offering information. You know, these financial institutions have access to any and everything that you need to learn about financial literacy in every aspect of your financial portfolio. And you do have people who work in these banks who don't care that much, who are there for a check. So definitely the bank contributes to why we have negative relationships. But we also have to think about us as a people. Us as people of color, we have not been able to look at the bank as a system that is for us. So we don't show up in a way in that relationship as beneficial, right? And when I say that, I mean, we have a number of clients who consistently overdraft, who consistently have non-sufficient fund fees, who cannot maintain accounts, who are always nasty when they come in. They don't ever want to be introduced to anyone. And it's like, when they do something, it's always the bank fault. It's your fault because my account was pending and it didn't post for 2 days and I spent more money than I had. You know, there are a number of issues that literally I can run down that, you know, that can that we can dig into to say, okay, so what really happened? What's the root of this issue? And a part of creating real strategic conversations is about showing up. It's about, can you be vulnerable enough to have a conversation with someone to really talk to them about your financial situation? And the thing is that when you work for the banking industry, you know, your business is private. So I encourage clients to go in and create those relationships, but we don't know how, because a lot of us still don't trust the bank. We don't trust the bank. We don't necessarily even hold our account and our status at the bank in a high regard. So we are those people who are disinvested from the bank. You know, when we have a community of people where even if it's not 10 out of 10, if it's 6 out of 10, where 6 people out of 10 people of color mismanage their banking relationships on a consistent basis, it will make a bank not want to invest in that particular community. So I see the issues from both sides. Yes, the bank absolutely needs to do their part. They absolutely need to come and mediate some of these issues that we have. But also, as a people, we have to start treating our finances differently. We have to start transitioning our mindset differently so that we can show up in these banking institutions and demand what we want, because ultimately your bank should be working for you. They're making money from your money regardless. So you need to get as much from them as you can. Make that relationship worth it. And we just have not figured out how to do that yet as people of color.
So it sounds like what you're saying is, if we catered to the relationship, if we nurtured it, if we gardened it, if we pruned the relationship, there would be wiggle room for maybe the bank to act as if, let's say, for an instance, you know how an angel investor sometimes they're like, you ain't got the experience. I really don't understand your business concept, but I know you and I believe in you. So let me try to get this loan or write this check for you. So you're saying, so it sounds like you're saying if we nurtured the banking relationships the same way, those business loans would act that in that same manner, in that same.
That's correct. Because the thing is that in business, it's always personal. In business, personal relationships are extremely important. And especially when it comes to banking, when it comes to money. And, you know, I can speak from personal experience. I've had clients who have not had A1 credit, you know, some below a 700. And I have been able to get them approved for business loans or business lines of credit, specifically based on the relationship that I had with the client as that business relationship manager, being able to get to know the client, their family background, their spouse, their household, their dreams, their goals, et cetera. And being able to, both of us doing our part and nurturing that relationship. I have been that banker on the phone with underwriting that originally received the decline just based off of the numbers and made that phone call and had a conversation to say, hey, no, this is my client. I will advocate for them. Like, I'm willing to put my name on this because of the relationship that this client has been willing to foster with me. And I've gotten some of them approved. Like, if some people think it's magic, but it's not, it's based on the relationship. Because the thing is that if you don't have a relationship manager and you're just walking into a bank to apply for a loan, if nobody in that branch can advocate for you, they are not going to go to bat for you, because at the end of the day, it's still a risk. Like, it is still a risk. And let's just be honest, a lot of business owners within our community don't necessarily do the homework to create a solid foundation to reduce some of the risk. We have a lot of businesses that are established based upon, oh, this is my hobby. Oh, I love doing this. This is my passion. But they did not do the foundational financial work to even create a solid or sustainable plan for the business. So you got to think about the banker being faced with that, having someone who comes in, their financials might not even be in order for real. They might not
talk
even
about it.
Plan.
Talk.
Like, they might not even have a business plan, like, let's be honest, but they want to come in with demands, like, I want you to give me this money because I believe in myself to go build a business. Yeah, that's cool, but if we don't even know you, if you're that client who consistently comes in, make deposits, make withdrawals, and you don't want to speak to anybody unless you want something, you can't really expect that person to bend over backwards for you. Like, you just can't. Granted, the bank has to have more people who care like me, so that clients can also see that. that will make them willing to be vulnerable, to have those type of conversations, to create a relationship.
It's interesting you say for one, there's a couple of things I'm getting at. There's not enough of us in the industry, meaning that people of color who look like us, who would make people feel uncomfortable. Because I think some of the entrepreneurs, Black entrepreneurs, they have a defense mechanism. I don't want to tell this white person my business, but I might be more comfortable. And, you know, for if it was a woman, I'm sure women would feel comfortable telling you. If it's a dude, will feel comfortable telling me. And I feel like it's not enough us, in especially in the banks that they're going, your PNCs, your BB&Ts, or what is it, Truett's now or something like that. your Chase.
Your Chase
and things like that. So there's a mechanism there. But there's also to be said about the networking. And this is where I feel like that we lack sometimes. The networking is essential. Like, people don't want to have those, you know, just passing conversation when you come in and making a withdrawal, saying you the brass manager. Oh, Miss Peel, how's it going? How's your dog? Blah, blah, blah. You know, chopping it up randomly.
Yeah.
You know, just like letting people get familiar. And people, here's another thing from what I'm getting from what you're saying, it probably would be who of you to go to the same branch all the time to do your business.
Yes. Yes. Granted, you know, it's cool if you have to stop by another branch because you're out of town, blase, blase, but you do want to create a relationship with that branch that's typically closest to your home or closest to your business so that you can nurture that relationship. Like, we want to see your face. We want to understand how you conduct business. We want to understand your business. But also, one thing that people miss is that as a bank, we want to also invest in your business by spending money there. Like, when we do have clients who come into the branch frequently who wanted to establish those relationships, when it was lunchtime and let's just say there are 5 restaurants to choose from lunch, if 4 of them we don't know and 1 of them we know on a consistent basis, who do you think we're spending our money with?
I hadn't actually thought about that.
It's a huge thing, and it's disturbing. It was disturbing for me, especially because in banking, so I started out in the DC market and then I moved to Baltimore. But in the branches that I served at in Baltimore, our clientele was not majority African American. So of course we would have I'm saying in Baltimore, when I got to Baltimore.
Okay.
So when I got here, I was working at the Arbutus location of Wells Fargo. Then I moved to the Harbor East location of Wells Fargo. And then I managed the Inner Harbor and the Harbor East branches of BB&T, which is now Truist. Yes, we had some clients of color, but our majority of client base was not people of color. So I would also be able to see the difference in just how these entrepreneurs prioritize their financials, but also how they thought of their relationships. When I became a branch manager, like, this is no lie, I had some people who did not look like us who literally just wanted to come in. They heard it was a new branch manager and they wanted to come meet me so that they can go ahead and establish that relationship. I want you to know me and my business. This is what we do. This is what we're working on. This is the relationship that I had with the previous branch manager. And this is what I expect. I never got that from people who looked like us ever. It was always from someone else. And even when, you know, I would be intentional, to be honest, about building my book of business with people of color. Like, I'll just throw that out there. Like, that was me. That was my MO. Yes, I had to help everyone in the banking industry, but I was intentional about going out there and finding those Black business owners who needed someone like me.
Talk about it, sis. I tell people all the time, if you're going to be Black. Don't turn down just because you got white clientele.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So my target was people of color. And granted, one thing that I did face is that people of color don't always contribute to your bottom line when you're working at the bank, because they also got to be able to get qualified for those things that produce for the bank. However, that wasn't a huge factor for me. It was about, how do I get this information to my community? How do I support them in this way, especially within this position? Because when you are Black and you are a branch manager or you are a business relationship manager, like, you have authority, you have power, you can do things to advocate for your community. And that's who I was. And it is disturbing that there aren't a lot of people out there like me. You know, a part of what I do at my company now is I help entrepreneurs of color find business bankers that they can trust. I will vet them out for you. We will have joint conversations together. You know, I will ask certain questions just to get a gauge on who this person is that wants to take care of you. Because we have to do those things that might seem elementary, but they are huge in the long run. Think about this example. When COVID first started last year, and PPP loans and EIDL loans were coming out, if you did not have a banking relationship,
you weren't getting that money.
And then, you know what, let's take it a step further. If you did not have a specific person, that relationship manager, you were not getting access to certain types of information. Let's also be honest about that. Because in the bank, we get the information, but it's also it was about banking, who are we giving it to? Banking
people like you, putting people on the list before the list was even open.
Listen, that's right. That was me. That was me making the Black organizations that I work with had this information to distribute to their membership. Mm-hmm. But we have to understand how important it is to have a relationship with your bank.
So talk to me about staying in the small banking gears and establishing those relationships. But let's talk about not ruining the relationship with what I call subpar actions, whatever. I'm sure you've seen it. You're on social media like me. These, I like to call them gurus. You can't see me, but I'm doing hand quotes. Gurus telling people this is how you establish business credit. Get these trade lines, do all that. Like, is that, I need your opinion, being a business banker. Is that legitimate way to build business credit? Or are you running it? Or is it like kind of that thing that may not be necessarily illegal, but it might be frowned upon because you're not really building your business credit and business history? You're just throwing some things on there that you can pay a subscription or whatever to kind of show that you got open lines of credit, if you get what I'm saying.
No, that is a very good question. The best way to put that is, yes, some of that works. However, that is more of the untraditional way. And me personally, I believe that as a people of color, as entrepreneurs, we need to do things both traditionally and untraditionally. Yes, you need to go out there and establish your trade lines with these vendors that you're working with. But on the traditional side, you also need to make sure that your personal credit is intact so that you can qualify for traditional business credit so that you can start building your business credit with financial institutions. Listen, I was one of those people where if I did have clients who could not get approved through me with the bank, yes, I would send them to my alternative lending partners, right? So your CDFIs, your community development financial institutions, or just your business lending platforms. However, those are temporary fixes. Those are just so that you can get the money right now to achieve XYZ goal. But I firmly believe is that you still need to go back and do that work to make sure that your personal credit is in a good space so that you can qualify for business credit regardless of whom you're working with. And the thing is that as entrepreneurs, sometimes we feel like, oh, because I have an EIN number now, my personal credit shouldn't matter. That is not the case. Like, that is just not the case. Like, your personal credit matters until your business is super, super established, makes buku money where that business can vouch for itself. However, most of our business and with businesses, and especially within the small business landscape, they aren't even there yet to really do that in a way, in a traditional route where their business can just take care of the business. My personal motto is you need to make sure that your personal financials are intact so that you can help your business versus being a liability to your business.
And I was hoping you would give such a descriptive thing. I have no problem. I always tell people, like, when they're asking me for investing advice, that, you know, they'd be like, what do you prefer? Stocks, bonds, you know, crypto, high interest money market or savings account. I prefer you to use them all. Like, I want you to use
all of it. That's right.
I want you to use every financial vehicle available to you. Use those that you have mastered and know best the most, but definitely be in the rest of them just in case. And I feel like with this business establishing credit for Black entrepreneurs, you are completely right that they should be using a contingent of both, but make sure that you're still going to, you know, use the traditional, because there's still things that, you know, alternative, let's call them alternative, you know, what do you call it? Alternative business history establishments can't do, because those big banks, whether it's Wells Fargo or Chase, whatever, as your business grows, that's where the major financing is coming
from. Right.
That's where, if you're going to go for an IPO the traditional way, they're the underwriters. Like, you need that history. And those are the things that should be most important. Let's talk about, for those small business, let's say, like you said, I remember you said earlier that for people who come in here, you know, you turn the hobby into a business. and they weren't necessary. You know, people, they were getting paid through Cash App, PayPal, wasn't keeping receipts, anything like that. Do you have any, let's say, apps that you like or little tips you think they should have to kind of start, you know, getting that information in order for when they decide to start establishing that banking relationship or, you know, going for that banking loan, if they hadn't been tracking their expenses or, you know, their books as well as they should in the beginning?
Yeah, so I would definitely, QuickBooks is a good one. QuickBooks, you know, also has a feature for, you know, sole proprietors. So you don't have to get the advanced features in QuickBooks, but you can start off small. Even if you're not ready for a business software, you can even use personal softwares like Mint, you know, or Truebill, things of that nature, just to kind of keep up with your transactions. But the biggest thing that I'm going to say is, Jamal, is that even when we're starting, even when we think we're about to start, we need to stop moving forward with the notions that we can do it all, that we can do our bookkeeping, we can file our taxes, we can coach ourselves.
Talk about it. Tell them, get because, them CPAs, them accounts.
Yes, because at the very end of the day, you don't know what you don't know until you find out what you did not know, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're operating in your business by yourself doing everything, you are going to cap yourself at your personal ceiling. Stop doing that because you are hurting your business. So what it might cost you to have an accountant or retainer? So what? They're going to help you save money in the long run. They're going to help you not mess up on your taxes, right? They're going to prevent so many other issues that you can potentially face doing things on your own, but also they help you grow. They show a different perspective. They teach you along the way. A big piece that I have to tell our entrepreneurs is that start seeking guidance. And it does not have to be guidance for people that you have to pay. We have the Greater Baltimore Urban League that has an entrepreneurship center. Free information, free sessions, free coaches, et cetera. You have SCORE, which is, you know, the mentorship side, the technical assistance side of the SBA. There are so many free resources out here, and we don't want to take the time to invest in educating ourselves with those resources so that we can really create these sustainable businesses. A lot of times we are creating liabilities for our families. We're putting so much time, energy, money into these hobbies or into these businesses that's not producing anything. It's not producing anything for us, but it's also not producing anything for our families. What is the point? What is the point if it's not going to do anything for you? We don't expect you as professionals, we don't expect entrepreneurs to know everything about everything. We need you to know your industry, but we also need you to be able to have the understanding that you need a team of people to support you. Find your team, find your tribe for your business.
So you made a good point when you were saying it might save people some money if they get a CPA on retainer. And your work as a small business banker is, you have multiple clients. So would you, like, someone comes in, isn't keeping their books well or anything like that, would you recommend, hey, I have a business client who probably could cut you a deal or doesn't charge much? Have you ever done that type of introduction or cross networking?
That is what I do. That is literally what I am also known for. I'm a connector. I like to tell people, look at me as the centerpiece. Like when you look at a table, there is something in the center, right? That beautifies that table. I am your financial centerpiece. I might not be licensed in investments, or I might not be a CPA or a licensed insurance agent. However, I have a team of people that I refer to you, right? I am a big component of clients creating their financial dream team. And a part of what I do is make sure that I am facilitating these introductions to people that I have personally vetted out by either working with them myself or creating relationships enough with them that I know that they are good people and that most importantly, they care about the community. So absolutely, you can't find an attorney or you can't find an accountant or even a business banker. If you say, hey, I bank with, let's just say M&T, but I don't have a business banker, after having a conversation, I can help you facilitate that introduction to a business banker at your particular financial institution. The biggest thing for me now that I'm in business for myself, I can work with a number of banks, anybody. Before, when I was in banking, a lot of people would come to me, you know, for consultation and monthly coaching sometimes, but they didn't always bank with me. For me personally, I didn't care. It was about educating the client, but a lot of them didn't bank with me, and it was much harder to facilitate introductions to other bankers in that regard, because of course I am one. Hey, I work at this institution, so yes, I want your business. But now that I am not affiliated with an institution, I will do the work to help you even find a business banker with a bank that you already bank.
So talk to me, two things, like to kind of keep in the same realm. Talk to me about when you were a business banker in regards to seeing, you know, people, you know, in the culture coming with business plans, and your experience in the 5 years. Was it better for, you know, Black people to have just sole proprietorships, or did you see the businesses that had partnerships where the work was kind of spread out and it's not all dependent on one person and one partner, did they flourish better? In addition to that, what did you see, you know, in the pipeline in the years that you were coming? Like, what industries or what sectors did people, did you see startups or people operating in that maybe we might be missing, or, you know, sectors or industries we might not be in?
That's a great question. I ran into a number of situations where there were partnerships. And to be honest, sometimes it's a catch 22 with partnerships, because yes, you do split the risk, you split the financial liability, but now you are also, you have to come to a point where you trust this other person enough to also do their fair share of the work. I would run into a lot of clients where 6 months down the line or a year down the line, they're not even in partnership with that person anymore because that other person could not show up, or the other person had some financial difficulties that they were not open with in the initial conversation. So partnerships are great. However, you have to trust that person. Like, you have to know that person, and you have to have like hard conversations in the beginning. Like, you want to know the financial status of your partner, because you don't want to wait until y'all started this business. Now you're coming in for a startup loan and one person has good credit, one person does not. But because that person who does not still own more than 25% of that business, they have to be on that loan application, and now you're declined because of half of the party, right? So it's just also about trust. I don't usually steer one way or the next versus, you know, doing business alone or doing business in a partnership when it comes to like legality purposes, only because there are so many things that you have to consider when you're going in business with someone. And like, some people think that, oh, it's better if I go into business with my spouse or with a family member. And that's not always the case. I've seen people, you know, get hit with the okey-doke, you know, from a family member. You know, I've seen relationships break up from bad business deals. So it really just depends on, one, your industry, also your experience in the industry, and two, your ultimate capacity, because you also could be a person who just do not have the capacity to operate this business on your own. So yes, you might need to find a partner, but like, it just, it's a process, and it's a sticky process that you need to follow through with. Another component, when we talk about industries, like, I would work with a lot of people who didn't look like us that was in the tech industry. Like, a lot of people in technology, even if they worked for full-time companies, they created freelance companies where they were contractors and would do freelance gigs and create a business and a brand on their own still within their sector. I did not run into a lot of people of color who were in technology. Like, and we know that, even just thinking about 2021 now where we are, we know that tech is a soaring industry, like soaring, but I didn't experience a lot of people in that sector. Also, when it comes to real estate, right? I would meet some people who, excuse me, who might have owned a property or two, or might have one or two investments, but I never really ran into a lot of people of color who were real estate developers and or like real estate investors who had a portfolio of properties. I didn't see that. But it also goes back to even the issue of a lot of people of color not even necessarily being homeowners. So if you're not even a homeowner, I can't even expect you to have the acumen to think about being in a real estate business, right? So those were two industries that I saw a lot of other cultures literally soaring in, where I didn't have a lot of people who looked like me in those particular sectors. I hope that answered your question.
You answered both of them really well. So in regards to, because I know both you and I have worked in the banking industry, but in different sectors, what do you feel as though in the small business sector, because you know it's only 20 of them left in regards to the Black-owned banks, what do you think that the Black-owned banks are missing? Where are they failing the entrepreneurial? Like, Black people are coming into this entrepreneurial ecosystem. Like, it's in its infancy. It's growing. And we haven't even really hit the runway yet. We just,
on that's
your,
right.
Your mark reset. We in the running position. We haven't really taken off. And it's funny, people say that, like, you know, we have $1 billion black businesses, like, you know, the Kennedy app, you know, the guy just raised, I think it was $3.2 billion at a valuation or something like that. But that is a drop in a bucket that is dry. Like, people don't realize that the black entrepreneurial ecosystem is really dry. Like, we're just putting drops into it. Like, we really haven't even started pouring water into it yet. So what do you think the black banks, the ones that still exist for this point in time, what do you think that they're failing the black entrepreneurs in this ecosystem and in this industry that they can improve on?
Listen, I have a love-hate relationship with black-owned banks, right?
Tell me about it. I like that. Tell me about it.
Love it because they are supposed to be for us and about us. But what I hate is that sometimes they're not. You know, you have a lot of black-owned banks who still thrive and cater to cultures who don't look like us, who have big pockets, you know, just to ultimately, you know, stay in business. But the thing is that as a black bank, when we're looking at our black communities, we have to do more. And sometimes doing more includes doing some things for free. You know, yes, you know, black.
You hit them with the free word.
Sometimes you got to reel them in there with something that's complimentary, like just being real, because if we have a community who already just don't see the value in certain things, if there's a price tag on it, they're really not going to do the work to see the value in it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in order to get them in there, you do have to kind of offer them something that will make them willing to even come and take a peek. You know, I think black-owned banks need to offer more, you know, information on how to really break into like CRA, especially for our black nonprofits. You know, there are a lot of black nonprofits who bank with black banks and still don't even know how to take advantage of grant funding to help their nonprofit. You know, things like that. That should be an automatic when you are with an African American institution, right? But then two, it's also about technology. Like, you got to keep up with the game. Like, a lot of my clients who came from black banks, their biggest complaint was technology. Oh, their app barely works. Oh, their online portal is shot. I literally just got off the phone with a client right before this interview. And she was telling me that, yeah, I've been trying to get my bank statements online from my bank for the last 4 months. What?
Come on now, it's black, like, banks, 4 months, bro.
Listen, 4 months. Like, because the online portal hasn't been working properly. And I've been talking to this person and that person, and people have just been giving me the runaround. We got to do better. Like, we have to do better in showing up for our people. And a part of that is also being up with the times. Like, technology is important. I believe that black-owned banks need to be able to have robust online banking platforms. Like, you need to be able to, you know, apply for that business loan online, you know, through your black.
And let me talk about it, not to cut you off.
You can't even do that.
But not to cut you off, to add to that portion, their online presence should be more robust, because y'all can afford to have to have 2,000 branches across this nation.
That's correct.
Your online presence should be the most robust, should be the easiest to use, should make people feel like they don't even have to go to the branch. Like, that's, I can do everything online, but you're not meeting them. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that just hit me. I was
That's a great point. You know, black banks should find those monetary investments that they can use specifically for technology, because that's also how you're going to reach your people. You know, if you do have, you know, as a black-owned bank, when you have black clients that are complaining just because your systems aren't even up to date, like your systems and processes are antiquated, you can't expect for nobody else to want to do business with you. When your own people don't want to do business with you as a black bank, that's a problem. Mm. It's a problem. It's a huge problem. That's, and then also, I believe that their product should be more catered to the underbanked, you know, and underserved populations that are majority our community. Like, you need to have community-friendly products and services that will teach people how to create banking relationships and to grow in those relationships. Like, as a black bank, you can't have the same types of fees as a larger bank does, and you don't even have the same types of resources to offer to those clients. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Oh, she's throwing shots. She's throwing shots.
No, I'm just being real.
No, I feel you, but that's the blunt honesty of it, because that is so correct. They're still operating as if, one, this is the 21st century, this is still a segregated America, and this is that they're the only game in town, and they feel like offering the bare minimum should be able to get, offering the bare minimum and being Black should be solely enough for them to get clientele, and that's just not going to cut it.
And, not at all.
And you're so right. You cut them in places that I usually do, but I like hearing someone else say it, so I don't feel like I'm beating them up, because I feel the same way about the HBCUs in some way, but that's a whole nother story. But the Black banks are missing the community by being like, here's the conundrum I feel like they're in. They don't want to take the investment because they feel like if they get in debt, that they're going to not be able to get out of it and they're going to go out of business. You're worried about going out of business today. You keep going the same route you're going, you're going to end up out of business 10 years from now. So you might as well make a change.
That's right.
At least go down swinging if you go down.
And see, the thing is that you also mentioned a great point that still goes back into like our community and just general, where a lot of people of color don't want to use credit. They don't want to go in debt for their business because they're afraid of debt because of all of the credit issues that we have been faced with. But the reality is that in order to really advance in business and whatever business that you're in, you know, Black banks or, you know, our regular entrepreneurs, you have to use OPM to continue to grow. Like, it is necessary. Like, there is,
and it's not even your debt. If it's a business, if you structured it, white people do this all the time and Black people kill me.
All the time.
Quiet as it's kept, if your business goes out of business, and this is for people who structure it properly, if you have a C Corp, an LLC, something that is associated with you, but disconnected, that's disconnected from you. When that business go out of business, you know what you can do the next day? Start a new business and start raising new money.
And keep moving.
Yeah. And start raising new money. And people get, oh, it's not going to work. There's this thing. I read articles all the time where people talk about, you know, where a unicorn goes public. Nobody talks about that. The entrepreneur that this unicorn that's going public, the CEO of it, no one tells that he's a 4 or 5 time failed startup.
Yeah.
He's lost people's tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Somebody kept writing him a check. He kept coming up with a new concept. He kept pushing it. And they just kept doing it. And we have to get out of this mindset that, oh, we go out of business, no one's going to lose me money, issue me money. You think about it on the flip side. If you don't start the business, ain't nobody going to give you no money any.
That's true. That is very true. But a big piece of that too is that these other cultures are willing to do the work. You know, like when they say sometimes that we in our culture, we're a little lazy. Like,
we are. That's in some ways,
fact.
We are.
That is a fact. In some ways, we are very much so. And in one of those ways, we are financially lazy. Like, we do not want to develop a wealth mindset. We don't want to make financial sacrifices. You know, we don't want to not be able to buy those red bottoms or those Jordans to be able to create a college fund for our kid. Like, it's like we're missing like the foundational things, like the fundamental things, like we're still struggling with. So it makes it 10 times harder for us to really grow and to create sustainable businesses. Like, it's just so hard, Jamal. But this is why the work that I do is so important.
So let me get your opinion on, because I say this all the time, and because somebody's going to listen to this and talk about y'all making a blanket statement that don't apply to everybody. You know, some of us out here making six figures, $200,000-$300,000. Dude, would you agree with me? You've been in banking just like me, that the art of making money and the art of managing money are two different skills.
Absolutely. Like, a lot of people can go out here and make money. Like, hello, like anybody. And listen, we can be honest on this podcast, right?
Please.
You got strippers out there making money, making bank. You know, you got the boys out there making money, but nobody is teaching them how to take care of it. How do you keep it? How do you multiply it? How do you create something else with this money? And that applies to a lot of entrepreneurs in general. I have seen entrepreneurs who make money, and then when we're going through their bank statements, we're trying to figure out where
the money went.
Yes.
I read your mind because I knew what you were about to say.
They are two different things. Making money and managing it are two very different things. Like, they fit in two different categories on their own. Like, we are talented people. Like, we are the creators of all creatives. Yes, we can go out there and get the bag, but are you really securing it though, for real? Like, securing the bag for me isn't just going out there to go get it. securing a bag is, do I know how to go get it? Do I know how to take care of it? Like, can I really manage it? And also, can I multiply it? Can I invest it? Can I create more from what I just got? We don't do all of that. Think that because our business hit six figures and or our salary,
we got 10 grand in the bank account, that we good.
Not even.
And I'd be trying to hearken that point. Just because you got a lower savings, just because you put money in your 401k, just because you can spend and still make it back, doesn't mean you have proper money management. If I'm being with you, you're lucky at this point. You're lucky. Running on some luck. Right. And if all you are is one tragedy, one severe market downturn from a complete disaster, and then you'll be talking about, you know, I could spend it and get a rate back, or, you know, this is just a hard time, not a long time. No, if you had managed it properly, you wouldn't be in that. So I just always like to get someone's opinion who's been in banking, who's passionate about financial literacy. And all of us tend to agree, except the people who are not in our field, that making money and managing money are two separate things.
Absolutely.
And I want people to get, this isn't a like advertisement for, you know, I want y'all to have an FA and a financial planner, but it's not an advertisement for them. Like, there's no one paying me for this. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that you do need somebody of that caliber to teach you how to manage your money, because a lot of these young, let's be honest, a lot of us young Blacks are first generation coming into money. And I'm talking about financial stability. A lot of us grew up with parents who were poor.
Yep.
We grew up poor. So we're in the first generation of making 100K, making those six figure, running businesses. And if we're being honest, let's just lay it on the table. None of us have the proper education to really handle the caliber of money that we're running into.
That is something, you're right.
Except the rare few of us like me and you who literally study this for a living. We do it day in and day out. So we have the luxury of, it's literally our profession. So it's nothing to turn it over to our personal life. But if you are someone in tech or running an entrepreneurship, you might have the skill to run that business to make that 250K, but you really don't know have the skill to manage that money.
Yeah, no, you are absolutely right. You know, and let's make it real for people, yo. Like, some people are only another pandemic away from losing it all. Like, I ran into so many, like, it was disheartening to go through, you know, the beginning of COVID and seeing so many businesses who look like us fail. They did not have like any type of anything to help sustain them, at least even for a month. Granted, you know, nobody could have prepared for COVID. Like, nobody could have really said, oh, let me just make sure I'm good. So if a global pandemic comes around that lasts for a year plus, I'm good. No, nobody can prepare for that. However, what I am saying is that we have to do a better job at taking care of our finances so that we can create sustainable financial portfolios that can take care of us if something does arise. You know, that was one thing that led me to, you know, creating my own business in this pandemic, because our people need this information and they need to hear it cut and dry from people who care, from people who legit love y'all and who want to see y'all win. But you got to also hear the hard truth sometimes to create a shift in your perspective.
And I agree with you so much. Like, I could talk about this all day, but I won't take up too much of your time. But this has been great. I think the small business portion that you have is great. And I think we'll definitely have you on again, because I feel like there's so much that you probably learned and taught over those 5 years that could go more into an hour's podcast. So we'll get together and talk about other things that you think the community could hear and, you know, you want to present to them, and definitely anything like that. But as I always tell the guests, give the listeners one last bit of word of advice that you have in reference to, you know, small business banking, what they should be focusing on and what they should establish. I think the biggest point you've already established is they need to build them relationships, but anything else that you want to tell them. And then after that, drop your Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn handles, let them know any business services, anything that you have, basically brand you, tell them all about you.
So the biggest message that I want to leave to you guys is that you are worth the work. Yes, it is a process. Yes, it takes work, but you are worth it. And even if it's hard for you to make it plain and about you, think about your children, think about your lineage, right? I am an example of what it looked like for parents of color to create a business and actually create a sustainable business to create a different lifestyle for their child, right? My parents had me at the age of 42 years old. They both had worked different jobs, but never really had a solid career. And having a brand new baby and not really being financially stable, they had to figure out what else they could do. And that was to start a business. My father got licensed as a plumber, and my mom has been managing the business for over 20 years. And it has created a lifestyle for me as that child, as that heir. And here I am pouring back into that same community of business owners who look like me and who also look like my parents. So you are worth it, but also your children and your grandchildren will appreciate you for your sacrifices right now. If it was not for my parents and their business, I literally would not be here. But because they were able to make money and manage money, I was able to go to my dream school, you know, of Howard University. I was able to advance and go receive my MBA. I was able to really create a lifestyle, but also a picture of myself. I was able to establish a perspective based off of what I saw my parents do and based off of the life that they gave me through their business. You are worth it. Your family lineage, y'all are worth it. Follow me, follow me, follow me on Instagram. My personal Instagram is LPO The Real Deal. My business Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn is at Kingdom Vision Consult. I love y'all. I appreciate you. This was absolutely great. I'm already getting ready for part two of this conversation. If you want to reach out to me, our email is info@kingdomvisionconsults.com.
All right. Y'all heard on the ones and twos. This was a fun interview. I always enjoy the guests. They come on and, you know, we just vibe and talk about what, you know, the culture need, what state that we're in and where we should be in the future. Definitely going to bring this guest back for you guys and make it a good one. This has been another episode of The Culture's Money, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.